Primetime replay from Money FM 89.3.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. Now, after nearly 2 years of conflict, the United States and China signed a trade truce yesterday, cooling trade tensions between the two superpowers that have rattled the world. U.S. President Donald Trump called it a momentous step, one that's never been taken before with China towards a future of fair and reciprocal trade. But where does it fall short with regard to the comprehensive trade and reform agreement that his administration wanted when it launched its trade war with China in 2018? We find out with Provost Chair and Professor David DeCremer, Department of Management and Organization at NUS Business School. Professor, thanks for joining us today. Firstly, tell us about that momentous U.S. Phase 1 trade deal with China. What does it do and doesn't do, and how will it impact China actually making those major economic reforms?
It's a big question, so let me structure it a little bit. What it does to China is significant. As you know, China has several initiatives, the Made in China formula, the China 2025 plan. So having the first phase of the trade deal signed, there will be a sign of relief throughout China, because now they realize, okay, they don't have to compete in terms of getting their products out and being faced with high tariffs imposed by the U.S. So they'll have less pressure to move their production lines to other low labor cost countries. So the Made in China formula gets some air, to say so, because the growth in China had been declining. For the China 2025 project, where we see that they want to move from a manufacturing economy to a highly tech-dominated service economy, the trade deal will give them some breathing space as well, because with the trade war going on, the U.S. actually was putting pressure on how China had to regulate their own industrial transformation. And we know that China, Beijing, crafts very carefully their own economic plans, and they don't like any intervention there. So with the trade deal being signed, this will give them some more room again to adjust and push their transformations forward. Of course, for the U.S., it also has some advantages there. First of all, for Donald Trump himself, he can say that if this works out, he will be the initiator of it, so he's done a good job.
Yeah, political bragging rights.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. He called out on China, and then he actually brought them back to the table, and he has a deal in hand. So this looks very good for his possible re-election. And even if it would not work out, he will still be able to claim the fact that he initiated it by saying, hey, China is not a currency manipulator. I'm willing to admit mistakes that I've made in the past. You see, I tried, but still they don't. So they're the bad guys. For Trump himself, it's a good thing. For the U.S., I can also see, of course, the deal includes that for the next 2 years, the U.S. would be able to export about $200 billion to China. And this will be, of course, very good news. It's a big number. Helps him with the re-election as well. But there are questions in my mind there. First of all, will the U.S. be able to deliver so many products for export? Because Trump last week was already saying to the farmers, okay, buy more land, buy more tractors, buy more equipment, because if this deal lands, you'll have to work harder. So there's a little bit of question there as well. Will they be able to deliver this? And second of all, if this would ever happen, $200 billion in 2 years, how will the Chinese market react? How will the Chinese react? I mean, they're pretty open towards having foreign products, because in their view, they're high-quality products. But $50 billion per year extra that they would have to buy, I'm not sure how China is going to react to that.
Let's talk about Trump's agriculture and manufacturing base first. Do you think this is going to go down well with them, this latest move?
Well, it all depends on framing, of course, as you already said, the political bragging right, and we know he's very good at that. So he can frame it very well, using, like I said, the big number, $200 billion. It's a lot of products we need to produce. Like I already mentioned last week, he was already hinting upon it in his tour to the farmers, to the manufacturers. There will be so much work waiting for you. Basically, that's what he was saying. But if you look at the numbers itself, don't forget that in the last 2 years of the trade war, the U.S. has been giving subsidies also to the agriculture area. $28 billion of subsidies have been given, which is twice the amount when they saved the car industry in 2009 after the financial crisis. So no matter how much money they can make in the next 2, maybe 3, 4 years even, look, they already made significant losses. I mean, on average, I think it's about $1,300 to $1,500 that every U.S. family had to pay extra because of the trade war. So the $200 billion is not really a $200 billion number, if you know what I mean.
Let's talk about then China. Do you think they can meet that pledge of buying $200 billion of extra goods from America each year? And if it can, what happens in 2022 when the deal expires?
Well, I'm not convinced that China will buy for $200 billion.
Oh dear!
If you look at the history, they won't. So they're okay with imported food, milk, clothing, high quality because it's from the West. But buying it at a normal rate is one thing. Another thing is, of course, if suddenly, hey, every year an extra 50, 60, 70 billion has to be bought, they're not going to easily comply with that. And the second thing, like I already said, history has also shown that Beijing doesn't like any other country to intervene with their carefully designed government policies. And the $200 billion in 2 years that is intervening with your government policies, especially so with respect to their economic ambitions, I think the same will happen. A lot of promises have been made. There's going to be peace, but the most difficult part of the trade agreement is not really the first stage, what they sign now. It's the second stage.
So, Professor, now that phase one is in the bag, it allows both sides to maybe put off the most difficult disputes until after the November election. What's going to happen to phase two? Is there a risk the deal might fall apart later this year? We have to wait another 2 years before it can happen?
Well, I don't think it's going to fall apart in the next few months or this year, like I said. I think China is hoping that Donald Trump will start paying a little bit less attention to the trade war and the trade agreement that needs to be developed further in the second stage because of the fact that he has to run for his presidency again. So I think they're hoping for that.
How likely is that, though, for him to move his attention away?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump, I mean, as we've seen, there's one thing that's certain is that he's unpredictable. So no one can really say that. But I do think that it will take a lot of his time. I don't think in the next year or so they're unhappy that there's some peace right now because they both need times for their own domestic policies and economics. So from that point of view, I don't think it will fall apart right away. What I do think is once the second stage will be addressed in a more serious way, we'll see a lot of conflicts emerge. Because don't forget, some of these issues are like, okay, U.S. banks can enter the financial industry more easily in China. China will not be able to force U.S. companies anymore to share technology secrets, or they have to refrain from stealing intellectual property. Those are very tangible things, and of course, those are things that are very important in the technology war that's also going on. I think once we see that those things really have to be addressed, you're going to see that it's not in the bag, as you said.
Any other thornier issues that might come up in future rounds, you think, of negotiations?
Well, not that I see right away. One of the things is really going to be, we have promises right now, stage one. And this has settled the war for a while now. The second stage is going to be tangible. So I think everyone will be waiting for this, but in the meantime, trying to clean up some of the mess back home. So I think that's what's happening.
Let's talk about the wider implications for the global economy. Are there any with this signing of the phase one trade deal?
Well, you see that the markets are happy, but we all know markets just respond to, there's uncertainty.
Now there's somewhat certainty.
If they see uncertainty, they're saying the world is coming to an end. There's suddenly some certainty. Things go up again, so that's happening now as well. But I think, like I said, what has happened now is both leaders, Xi Jinping and Donald Trump, they've bought some time. Trump is going to re-election mode within a year. And for President Xi Jinping, he also needs some time because, like I said, they've had some setbacks in terms of the growth within China, their GDP, which is not going as they planned. Plus, also, he wants to focus on more sensitive issues, President Xi Jinping. In the rest of the world, one is okay, what is going to happen with the UK after the Brexit? Is the golden era going to be revived again? So can they focus on the UK? And the second one, for example, is the EU. Because the EU has made very clear as well that they also think that China should respond to their demands, because between the EU and China also, there's also a trust deficit. Of course, the EU is much less hostile than the US is now under the leadership of Donald Trump. Xi Jinping also knows that he will have to address the EU concerns right now. So if everything is a little bit more peaceful between him and Donald Trump, then he will have some more time to address the trade deficit between China and the EU.
We're speaking with Provost Chair and Professor David Kremer, Department of Management and Organization at NUS Business School. A couple of days ago, though, the US reversed its decision to ban China, a currency manipulator. You mentioned this earlier. As the two countries prepared to wind down their trade war, US says it made the change because China had agreed to refrain from devaluing its currency to make its own goods cheaper for foreign buyers. Now, Trump's gone as far as repeatedly accusing China of allowing the value of the yuan to fall, making Chinese goods cheaper. But on Monday, the US said that the value of the yuan had appreciated since August at the height of the trade war. So looking back at the US dropping the currency manipulator tag before the phase one deal, how long do you think it'll be before the US government gets back to blaming China and calling them a currency manipulator again?
Well, they've done this several times in the last 2 or 3 years, so you can expect this. But I think we need to add something there is Donald Trump is right in saying China was a currency manipulator, but he's very, very late in saying that, because actually there is financial evidence that since 2014, you cannot really say anymore that China is manipulating its currency. Before 2014, their game was to buy a lot of dollars, sell a lot of RMB, but after 2014, they started selling a lot of dollars. So the game has completely changed, and if we see that the RMB depreciates, it's usually because it's not keeping up with what's happening internationally in terms of the currencies. So the claim is not validated anymore. Trump is very late. So that means what he's saying is not true anymore. Mm. So it's very clear that he's been just using this, being a bully, and he will yell it whenever he feels it's needed to impress people back home.
Provost Chair and Professor David De Kremer, Department of Management and Organization at NUS Business School. Thanks for joining us today, Professor.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.